4. It's a colorless day. The kind of fall day not advertised. The trees shiver in the wind. I take a long, hot shower. There's a tyrannical pounding inside my head. I take 3 aspirin and wash them down with a glass of murky tap water because I refuse to take the bottles from the mini fridge and get charged some ridiculous amount by the hotel. I don't know how long I slept last night, but any sleep I got was marred by the dream. I need a coffee IV. There's also this nagging voice telling me I should go home, return to my own bed for some decent rest, spare myself any potential unpleasantness, hibernate, become the hermit eternal I'm meant to be. I know this voice will shut up as soon as I see them. I get dressed and go down to the dining room early. It's 8:30, but I need coffee. I find the booth we sat in last night and slide in. I don't even have to ask for coffee. Just turn my mug the right side up, and they bring a whole thermos for the table, along with cream and sugar. Hallelujah. I'm not functioning until my 3rd cup, when my brain fizzes awake. I get flashes of the dream whenever I blink, split-second reminders of what I saw. It makes me queasy. I text May, who I know is already awake. Hey, good morning. I'm downstairs, I write. I add a sad face. Didn't get much sleep. Oh no, I'm sorry. Coming down. I'm at our table from last night. Be right there. And she is. With a puff of fairy dust, she appears a minute later, her skin dewy, her hair perfect. She's wearing a Prada t-shirt, red trousers, and slip-on sneakers that could be from Target but are probably designer and cost more than my rent. Her pink army jacket, I know, is a thrift store find. I was with her when she got it. She was so happy she danced around with it all afternoon. I've never seen her so happy since. Love struck. I'm sorry you didn't sleep, she says, frowning. Was the bed not comfortable? No, that wasn't it, I say, pouring her some coffee. I've just been having trouble lately. She says. I think Molly has melatonin. She usually takes it. She's not a great sleeper either. I have Ambien. You shouldn't take that, she says. I don't like chamomile, I say. She gives me the click. What's on the agenda for today? I ask, redirecting. Well, she says, sighing, I thought we would go for a walk, see the grounds, but it's dreary out. And I had signed us up for a distillery tour, but I think it's canceled. I got a call this morning about it, but the phone cut out. I think the wind is really bad. That's okay. We can find stuff to do. You said there's a movie theater, right? And an indoor pool. Heated. See? We'll be fine. I know, she says. It's important to me we all have fun, especially Julie. We will. Don't stress about it. I know, she says, pouring enough cream in her coffee to take the color out. She reaches for the sugar. She'll use it all. You don't like coffee, I tell her for the 1,000th time. I like it, she says. I like it how I like it. She stirs with some of her charm school flair. She knows I'm watching her. She taps the spoon against the rim once. Blanche. We call her this sometimes when she's being a belle. She ignores me. So, this girlfriend lady of yours, Taylor, you really into her? Yeah, May says. I mean, I am. It doesn't feel like it usually does. There's none of the does she like me back jitters. I know she does, and she's very sure of herself. I've never dated anyone like that before. I attract confused people, you know that. But Tay's not confused. May and Tay, wow. I'm excited about it, truly. But I'm still, you know, there's part of me that's hesitant, worried it won't pan out.
That's always a possibility. But you can't let it stop you from pursuing this relationship if it makes you happy. You have to allow yourself to live your life. Could be worth the risk.
You're one to talk. Yeah?
I didn't mean it like that. I just think you should start dating. You don't need to keep punishing yourself, Lise.
I'm not punishing myself.
You are.
May, you and Molly both. Impossible.
I think Molly dates. She just doesn't tell us.
You think?
Maybe not. Molly had a high school sweetheart named Matt. He went into the military straight from graduation, and after two tours in Iraq, he wasn't the same. The distance didn't help either. She tried to make it work because she loved him, but also because she had convinced herself no one else would be able to accept where her leg stops. When the relationship was beyond saving, they broke up, and Molly didn't make an effort to date anyone else. She made an active effort not to date. She presented herself as one of the guys, friend zone only. We knew boys who had crushes on her in college, but they were too intimidated to say anything. One thing about Molly is she doesn't know how beautiful she is, and she assumes any compliment is an act of charity. We stopped trying to tell her. Eventually, everyone does. What's the point? She reacts with venom. No guy can pursue her. It's like trying to cuddle a porcupine. I yawn, refill my coffee cup.
You should go back to bed. Try to get more sleep. You could meet us later.
No, I just drank my weight in coffee. I should be fine.
Okay, she says. Should we get mimosas?
Yes.
We shouldn't wait for the others.
Order 4. You're the smart one, honey. Order 6. That way we can be on our second.
The waiter, an older guy with his gray hair pulled back in a low ponytail, gives us a curious look but doesn't ask any questions. He brings us 6 mimosas.
Cheers,
we both say, and clink the other 4 glasses. It's good to be with May again. She's easy to be around. As she would say, positive energy. I wish I could leech it off her, keep it for myself.
Started without me,
Molly asks, standing above us with her hands on her hips.
Good for you.
She sits down next to May and grabs a mimosa.
I'm assuming this is for me? Julie's not here yet?
Nope,
just us, May says. Elise didn't sleep last night. No, I didn't sleep great either. The waterfall kept making me think I had to pee.
Maybe this wasn't the best choice, May says.
Don't get pouty, Molly says. I would have an issue anywhere. I don't sleep well. I like it here. It's like a quaint Vegas, sans casinos. And that's for the best because I think I have a gambling problem.
Okay, May says, and takes a measured sip of her drink.
Did you guys order yet?
No, we waited for you. We browse the menu, engage in the great debate, pancakes or eggs. We're hungry, but we wait for Julie. Another 5 minutes go by, and just as May's about to call her, she comes skipping over. She looks better today. Her skin more like skin and less like whatever it looked like yesterday. Pudding with a film on top.
Good morning, she says, cheery. Late to the party, as per usual.
Party doesn't start without you, I say, scooting in so she can sit next to me.
Sorry if I kept you waiting.
I slept in.
Did you sleep okay? May asks.
Yeah, took me a while to fall asleep. But once I did, I was out.
Didn't wake up at all.
Good, May says.
We signal the waiter and order. Julie asks for more coffee. She says she's not hungry and doesn't want anything. But then she orders steak and eggs, hash browns, no toast.
What's on the agenda for today? Julie asks.
The weather put a wrench in things, May says. It's really windy, and it's supposed to rain all day. I thought we could go to the indoor pool for a morning swim, have lunch, then we can check out the movie theater. How does that sound? Good, good, Julie says. She unwraps her napkin and her fork slips away, bouncing off the table and onto the seat between us. We both reach for it, and when our hands touch, I gasp. Oh my God, Julie, your hands are freezing. I slip my fingers under my thigh to warm them up. She responds with a hostile growl. That's the only way my brain can reckon the sound she makes. They're not. Yours are clammy, she says with a little too much malice. She inches away from me on the seat. You have the clammiest hands. I look to May and Molly for help, for sanity, but they're looking anywhere else, at anything but me. Their eyes are on the ceiling, on the floor, studying their nail beds. Our food comes. It gives us something to do. The coffee hasn't done much for me except make me shaky. I can barely hold my silverware. My eyelids are itchy, tired, and this all doesn't seem quite real. I might nap after breakfast, I tell them. Okay, May says. Did you want some chamomile? Cute, Mabes. No, I think I'll pass out right away. I have to call Tristan, Julie says, but I'll meet you for lunch. No pool? May asks, her disappointment expanding her bottom lip. Maybe, Julie says. The vibe among us is off. No one knows what to say next. Molly, who usually bails us out of ruts like this, seems to be more interested in her eggs benedict. I hoover my pancakes and excuse myself. See you soon, I tell them. I have a fear that this is what they've been waiting for, that they never wanted me around in the first place, or that I've just provided them with the opportunity to discover that they don't miss me. It's a pesky insecurity. It's immature. I'm angry at myself for thinking about it. I run into Patsy on the stairs. Good morning, I say. She looks frazzled. Her hair is elevated with a layer of frizz, and she's got dark bags under her eyes. She gives me a half smile. Morning, she says. Her enthusiasm from yesterday is gone. I wonder if she's got supersonic hearing and heard the four of us making fun of her. She passes me, moving oddly, in a hurry she's trying to disguise. Did you find her? She asks. I turn around and realize she's not talking to me. She's talking to another staff member who looks equally flustered. No, he says. Okay, well, then call Alex, please. See if she can come in. Patsy looks back at me, like she can sense I'm eavesdropping. I linger on the stairs, not bothering to pretend I wasn't. My room is finally a decent temperature. The thermostat seems to be working. It's dark, but I'm not afraid. Something about knowing that it's daytime, that outside my door other people are around, awake. I'm optimistic. I'm about to have a superior nap. I change back into my PJs and hop into bed. My head on the pillow, I close my eyes. I open them again. Everything is still. It's just a room. I'm alone. I'm safe. I keep asking myself if I'm scared, and the answer is no. I'm really not. Not anymore. I wake up just shy of noon, well rested. It was a dense, dreamless sleep, exactly what I needed. Outside, the rain beats against the window like war drums. I kick open the curtain with my foot, too lazy to get out of bed. I see nothing but white fog. After I enjoy a few minutes of languid phone scrolling, there's a knock on my door. Three solid standard knocks. It's me, I hear muffled through the door. Who? Molly, asshole. I wrap the covers around me and waddle over. The door is
barely open when Molly pushes herself inside.
I'm dying out here, she says.
What? She throws herself onto the couch. What in the world? This isn't real furniture. This is doll furniture, literally. She transfers onto my bed.
It's so gloomy out, she says. It's cold in here.
What do you mean you're dying?
Okay, so we met up at the pool. May is there in, like, a monokini, ready to do fucking laps or whatever. Julie says she's calling Tristan and basically doesn't show up. She, like, meets us there to say she's not staying, but she'll come back later. She was like, I'll be back in an hour. May is all depressed, and she's trying to get me to go swimming, and I'm not undressing when there's, like, one fucking random old dude lifeguard standing there who's gonna have all his attention on me and Esther Williams over here.
Did Julie ever come back?
Nope.
Did you try to reach her?
I texted, but she didn't answer. My service is shit up here anyway, so who knows if it went through. And I get what May is saying about not ambushing Julie or whatever, but she's acting super weird. That thing at breakfast when she snapped at you?
That's not so out of character. She gets like that toward me sometimes, I say. And it's true. Sometimes we're mean to each other out of nowhere, just because. Like sisters.
I don't know, man. I can't shake it. Something doesn't feel right.
And this place, she says, shivering. She reaches out for the blanket, which is still draped around my shoulders. I get in bed next to her so we can share. I can't say this to May, obviously, but this hotel is creepy as shit. It reminds me of, like, a basement. Like, when you walk into an unfinished basement and get that feeling.
Don't look at me like that. You know what I'm talking about.
What you're seeing is relief. I thought I was being paranoid and crazy.
Why would you think that?
I don't know. I always assume it's me. And I've been having problems sleeping. But last night, I felt different. It wasn't basic insomnia. I couldn't sleep because I was scared.
Me either. I'm an adult woman, and I slept with the lights on.
Me too, I say, pulling the covers over our heads so we're in a cocoon.
So you do think it's haunted?
She rolls her eyes.
No, Elise, I don't think it's haunted. I'm not 12. It's more like I've seen this episode of CSI.
CSI, cute Catskills Hotel?
Exactly.
This isn't even our biggest problem. What do we do about Jules?
Fuck if I know.
She rolls over onto her stomach and yawns.
May went to go knock on her door and see what's up. I got to come find you.
Lucky you. She winks at me. So, what's new with you? I ask her.
Nothing, really. Happy to be working on the show, not bored of it yet.
She works as a producer on a late-night talk show. She's always telling me it's more glamorous than it sounds.
It's a bunch of people who haven't showered and haven't slept, eating junk food, sitting around with laptops, talking on the phone, sifting through scraps of paper and stacks of note cards.
Sounds glamorous to me. Anything is more glamorous than my job. But I guess that's by design. I'm an office manager at an insurance agency.
I like LA, she says. California's dope. It's cold here.
Look at this shit. She gestures outside, where the wind whines and carries the rain on its back. It's hideous weather.
You should move to California. Get out of your self-imposed exile. It's enough, Lise.
I'm not in exile.
If you say so. I'm not trying to have this argument with you again.
So don't have it. She sits up.
We should go.
Go where?
Get lunch. See our friends. Ugh. Don't be an asshole. Get up.
I do, reluctantly. Molly goes back to her room to respond to some work emails. She says she'll meet me downstairs in 15. I'm feeling much better than I was. Rested. At ease. I put on different clothes, tie my hair back, brush my teeth, go to the bathroom, wash my hands. The hotel soap smells amazing. Eucalyptus? I need to steal 1,000 tiny bottles from the first cleaning cart I see. The towels are soft, too. Extravagantly soft. I press one to my cheek. I hear a noise, a faint rattling. I nudge the bathroom door open with my knee. It was never fully shut. Bad habit. The door shrieks on its hinges. It doesn't go far. I give it another push, this time with my foot. It opens, and it opens in time for me to catch a glimpse of a shadow crawling beside my bed. Only shadows don't have limbs. This dark mass, dark figure, is humanoid, but not human. It moves, in the sliver of a moment, like an insect. It vanishes under my bed before I can ask myself if it's real. Well, it's not real. I know it's not real. I know what I just saw is not real. I reach for my phone, but who would I call? The front desk? What would I say? I just saw something inhuman crawl under my bed? They'd think I'm crazy. And they'd be right, because it's not real. I'm too afraid to confirm this by checking under the bed. I'm also too afraid to turn around and leave. With my back turned, it could run after me, grab me by the hair as I'm trying to get out. Was it under the bed this whole time? Were Molly and I on top of it, unwittingly shooting the shit while it listened in? This terrifying, obviously imaginary thing. Overcome by some incarnation of foolishness or bravery, I run over to the bed and lift up the bed skirt. There's nothing underneath. Right. Of course. I can't keep giving in to this anxiety. It's not normal. I force myself out of the room, plaster a smile on my face, and walk down to meet my friends. Hey, wait up, sleepyhead. Julie's behind me as I'm about to walk into the dining room. She looks strikingly good, even better than this morning. Her hair falls in fat, shiny curls. She's got on a long-sleeved black dress. It's loose, but she doesn't look frail in it. There's color in her cheeks. She looks healthy. She looks like Julie. She smiles at me, and that's it. We're back. We slide into the booth, and she puts her arm around me and squeezes. I don't look at Molly or May for a reaction to check if they're seeing what I'm seeing. I don't need the validation. I've got my Julie. Do you feel better, hon? May asks me. Yep, I say, ignoring the knot lingering in my stomach. Everyone's in good spirits. I'm not going to say, hey, by the way, I know we're worrying about Julie right now, but actually, I might be losing my mind. Sorry to keep you waiting. What's for lunch? Molly asks. I'm not that hungry. You want to split a sandwich? Julie asks me. It sinks me into the warm, woolly euphoria of familiarity, of affection. We used to do this all the time. Sure, I say. I'm not hungry at all, but I won't ruin the moment by saying no. You pick. You know I'll eat whatever. I know, she says. You pick. Okay. I always end up picking. We're going to the theater after lunch, May says. They're playing Rebecca. It's like they knew we were coming, Julie says, hugging my arm. Kismet, I say. She snaps her fingers like a beatnik. Snap, snap, snap. We eat our lunch and make our way to the theater. It's down a set of narrow carpeted steps. We come to a small lobby that smells like butter and bleach. The floor is black and white checkerboard vinyl. There's an array of vending machines and an old-timey popcorn stand, red with white script across the side that reads popcorn, as if you couldn't figure it out on your own. There's a slot underneath with paper bags, and on the front, two metal scoops hang by their necks, tied with red ribbon. The walls are painted glittery gold behind old movie posters in garish silver frames. Rebecca, Roman Holiday, Citizen Kane, City Lights, Casablanca, Gone with the Wind, Singing in the Rain. It's a cute room, but it lacks the production value of the rest of the hotel. They must have run out of money by the time they got down here. We're all full after a lunch we weren't hungry for in the first place, but we get snacks anyway, shoving quarters and dollar bills into the vending machines in exchange for bags of Twizzlers and peanut butter M&Ms. We go through a set of double doors to get inside the theater, which is all black. Black linoleum, black walls, a few rows of glorious black pleather loungers. We descend into them, and they form to us. Julie and I sit next to each other. I notice she smells a little. I noticed the smell upstairs in the dining room, but thought it might have been the room, some old food rotting on the floor somewhere. I'm so happy we've fallen back into our old rhythm. I'm willing to ignore it. I hold a bag of popcorn up to my nose and inhale, override everything with butter. Laurence Olivier, now that's a man, she says. That mustache. It's a man's mustache, I say. Would you date a guy with a mustache? She asks me. If he looked like Laurence Olivier. Ooh, it's starting, Julie says. Shh, Molly, shh. I wasn't talking. It's preemptive. Fuck off. I'm well behaved. Julie looks at me and mouths, she's not. What happens in this movie? Molly asks, obnoxious on purpose. Girls, May says in her best mom voice. It doesn't really matter if we're loud. We're the only ones here. But May has her rules, and Julie is very particular about her movie viewing experience. A minute passes. Title card, sweeping music. Julie leans over and whispers, who would you rather, Laurence Olivier or Cary Grant? Olivier? You? Probably Olivier, but Grant is charming. Cary Grant or Jimmy Stewart? Oh, God. Shh, May says, I can hear you whispering. Seriously, what happens in this movie? Molly asks. Watch it, it's good, Julie says, patting her on the knee. It starts, and we're quiet for a while. Engrossed. Julie and I first watched this movie our freshman year, drunk after a bad party at a frat house. We huddled on the couch in our common room under layers of blankets. We shared a pint of mint chocolate chip ice cream. We stayed up until 5 a.m., talking about what a good movie it was and whether or not we'd ever date a widower. We theorized about the true weight of baggage in relationships we weren't mature enough to have or experienced enough to understand. As I watch the movie again with her now, there's a phantom taste of mint in my mouth. Sometime after they search the shipwreck, I realize I'm falling asleep, blinking infrequently, eyelids lingering shut. The actors become faceless. They speak a language my brain doesn't translate. Elise, wake up! Watch the movie! Julie says, nudging my arm. You're missing prime Olivier hotness. Sorry, I yawn. I'm watching. You all right? She asks. Big eyes, lashes curled. She heats up the eyelash curler with a blow dryer. It works better hot, she used to tell me. But not too hot. Don't want to burn your eyelids. That'd be misery. When the music soars and end credits roll, Molly says, fucking exes, man. What did you think, May? I ask her. She's making a funny face. It was good, she says, her voice too high. But unpleasant. Ah, Mabes, Julie hugs her. We leave the theater, step into the lobby. The light stings. We rub our adjusting eyes. I would have peaced out the minute I saw that house, Molly says. No, thank you. I thought the house was beautiful, May says. I loved the house, Manderly. Hard no for me on the house, Molly says. She comes to an abrupt stop. Her face scrunches. What? I ask her. She leans her head back, looks up at the ceiling. She's standing underneath an air vent. It's not an ordinary vent. Of course not. Not in this hotel. All the vents here have different decorative covers. This one is antiqued brass with delicate swirls. She points up to it.
It's a vent, Julie says. I can see that, Molly says. I think it just dripped on...
Before she can finish the sentence, a fat drop lands on her forehead. She jerks back.
Ugh!
She wipes it away with her hand. None of us yells. None of us gasps or screams. None of us makes any sound at all, even though we see Molly's palm is red, even though there's a red smear across her forehead where she was dripped on. It's a random shock that robs the room of air.
It's rusty pipe water, Julie says, shrugging.
She dances past Molly.
What should we do next, Mabes? It's not fucking water, Molly says, shaking her head. It looks like blood. It feels like blood.
It's not blood, May says. It came from the vent. Another drop falls, this time onto the floor. It lands with a crisp tap.
See? It's leaky, Julie says. Lise?
Molly says. Her eyes are distressed, huge, inflated like balloons. I lift her hand up to the light. Along her palm is a thin layer of red. It kind of looks like lip gloss with that assertive shine. There's no way to tell what it is. Condensation, I say. I really don't know what else it could be. The grate is probably rusted on the other side, like Julie said. May, hand sanitizer?
On it, May says.
She already has it out, squeezes some into Molly's hand.
This is gross,
Molly says, furiously rubbing her hands together.
You're looking at me like I'm overreacting. If it were any one of you, you'd be having a fit.
You're not? Julie asks.
Julie,
May says.
I'm sorry, Molly.
Molly groans.
I feel like I need a shower.
Here, Julie says. She licks her thumb and uses it to remove the red residue on Molly's forehead.
Get out of here with that,
Molly says, pushing her away.
Come back, my little lion cub,
Julie says, chasing her through the lobby.
I will lick you clean. Ew, Julie.
May says, clutching an invisible set of pearls.
Help, Molly says, hiding behind the popcorn machine. Help me!
Sorry, I would, but I kind of want to watch this play out, I say. May, popcorn?
All right, May says. Let's be nice to each other.
What does everyone want to do next? You know what? I could use a drink, Molly says. Let's go back to one of our rooms and get trashed. We brought bottles, and we have snacks.
Yeah?
May asks, looking at Julie for her approval. Sounds fun, Julie says.
Lise?
Yep.
Your room is the biggest,
May says. She lilts like it's a question, but she isn't asking. My room was supposed to be Julie's. Joke's on me, because I hate my room. The thought of going back to it gives me pins and needles. Sure, I say. Maybe it won't be so bad if I'm not alone. Let's go. We head up the stairs.
Did you bring chasers?
Molly asks.
Who are you kidding?
Molly says.
I've watched you chug tequila out of the bottle multiple times, you monster.
I don't have the slightest idea what you're talking about, Julie says.
Really? No recollection of those nights? I'm shocked.
I have pomegranate soda and ginger ale, May says. Is that okay?
That's perfect, Julie says, reaching for May's face.
May lets it happen, but when Julie's hand grazes her cheek, May's eyes twitch madly, and she reaches up to adjust her glasses, breaking contact. We go to May's room to get the liquor. All I want is to stay here in this pink paradise. It's warm and bright and smells like roses. She hands me a liter of soda and a deck of cards.
Ready?
It's the opportunity to ask,
Can we stay here? The question bounces around my mouth. The urgency of it surges, and I'm afraid of how the words will sound if I let them out, so I don't. My room is fine. It's me. I repeat this to myself until we're there. When I open the door, I let my friends in first. They fill the room with something different. Julie sits on the floor like a kindergartner, leans her head way back to look up at me. May sits on the couch, tucks one ankle under the other as she carefully unwraps the plastic from the neck of the bottle of gin. After a thorough hand washing, Molly sits herself in one of the chairs, whiskey already open. She's drinking straight from the bottle. Molly, Molly, Molly. Hope none of you minds my cooties, she says. This takes me back, Julie says, to the pre-gaming in our dorm room days. Except we'd be drinking Southern Comfort and Malibu, I say. 99 bananas. Stop, Molly says. I'm going to throw up. Just the thought of Southern Comfort, Julie says. I had Southern Comfort ice cream last summer, May says. There's a shop in the village that makes all these boozy ice creams. And you didn't immediately exorcist-style vomit? It was good. I never got sloppy with it, she says with pride. Molly raises her eyebrows. You didn't, huh? We have our stories. Denial is fruitless. If one of our memories fails, the rest of us will pool ours together. We're witnesses to one another's triumphs and destruction. We're eager to reminisce, though we each have our own version of events. The only time any of us has seen May genuinely drunk was the night we tried Southern Comfort for the first time. She ended up aggressively making out with a stranger who had a Nightmare Before Christmas neck tattoo and a rat tail. It was unclear how old the stranger was, whether she went to our school, and if she didn't, why she was at a party thrown by our mediocre baseball team. May disappeared with her for a while, and we found them in an upstairs bathroom, snorting lines of cocaine off the back of a toilet. We had to pry May from the house at 3 a.m. as she kept shouting, "But I love her! I love her!" "You don't even like Tim Burton," Molly yelled, struggling to pull May out of the door. "Or hard drugs." "You don't understand. She's my soulmate." In the morning, she made us all swear we would never talk about it again. So we didn't. We don't. But I wonder if when she had that ice cream, she thought about that night. I wonder if, for a moment, she never wanted to see us again because she knew sometimes we thought about it too. You can't erase your past when there are pieces of it scattered inside other people. "Sit," May tells me, patting the couch. I walk over but land on the floor instead, next to Julie. She hands me a can of soda, and May passes me the bottle. I take a sip of the soda and pour some gin in the can, hand the gin to Julie. She does the same. "Cheers," she says. We tap our cans together. Take a sip, narrow our eyes. She knows. She gets the bottle and pours a little more for us. "To us," May says, lifting a glass I'm guessing she brought from her own room. "Should we put on music?" Julie asks. "I think there's something wrong with my TV, but I'll try." I get the remote off the mantle and turn the TV on. I manage to navigate to a screen with music channels. "What genre?" I ask. "Smooth jazz?" "Hits," Julie says. "Hits isn't really a genre of music," May says. She's an intolerable music snob. That contributes to my motivation to select hits. The first song that comes on is by some whiny boy band. I leave it on because I've already made my choice. The sound is working fine. "Like no time has gone by," Julie says. "It has, though. I don't know this band," I say. "And I bet we're too old to date any of the members." "That's old. We're getting old." "Elise, don't say that," May says. I don't think it's fair that I'm 27, Julie says. The last 2 years shouldn't count.
The rest of us don't know what to say to that. Trying to save an awkward silence, I say, if you don't remember them, they don't count.
Thanks, Lise. We should all take a shot, Molly says.
I know what she's doing. She thinks if we all get drunk, she can ask Julie the questions she wants without the repercussions. She can apologize tomorrow and blame the whiskey. Maybe she thinks there's a chance the alcohol will loosen Julie's lips, if Jules is actually hiding something. I'm not opposed.
Shots, I say.
We each gulp from the bottle as the others cheer us on. Well, Molly and I do. May doesn't take shots, and when the bottle gets to Julie, she pours it into her can and drinks from there.
That's not a shot, Molly says. The can is empty. No mixer left.
Okay, I'll allow it.
God,
Julie says, pulling a finger across her bottom lip, smudging her vibrant red lipstick. She wipes her lips again.
It's been a while since I've done that.
Hmm?
Taken a shot.
Oh, I say, me too.
You're not taking shots all the time? Wake up shot?
Yeah, morning shot, mid-afternoon shot.
Flask in your desk drawer?
You know me. Molly starts singing along to the music in a funny voice.
Oh my God, this song!
Julie stands up and starts to dance. May joins her immediately. Positive reinforcement for normal behavior.
Come on, May says, grabbing my arm.
She gives me a look. This isn't optional. Dancing is required. I take another drink out of the bottle and get up.
Malls?
Fuck off,
she says. Molly doesn't dance, not for anyone. She does keep singing along, belting now. My neighbors must hate me, if I have any. Huh. I don't like the idea of two empty rooms on either side of me. A memory surfaces. It speaks to me in a newscaster voice. A woman in a motel in bumfuck Indiana. Someone broke into her room and she screamed and screamed, but the rest of the hotel was vacant. No one could hear her. She tried to dial 911, but somehow ended up recording her own murder. The audio lives on the internet. It's not hard to find. I hope I have neighbors. May grabs my hand and spins me around, pulling me back into the moment. The three of us vibrate around the room, break into weirdo dance moves. Julie, the only one of us who can actually dance, tries to mask it. She's always done that. Maybe to make us feel better, or maybe because it's more fun.
We're so cool, Julie says. We're the coolest. Everyone in the world is jealous of how cool we are.
I'm cooler than all of you, May says while attempting to moonwalk. Molly is laughing so hard, whiskey drips out of her nose.
Lost some good whiskey out there, she says before taking another sip.
We do this for a few more songs until we run out of gas. We collapse back into our positions. May sneezes.
It's official,
Julie shouts. May sneezes a lot when she's tipsy. It's an adorable quirk.
May's got the buzz, Molly says. I'm allowed to sneeze.
Julie opens another can. She's on her second or third. I've lost track. A new song is on, and I don't remember what came before it. I'm tipsy too. I don't know if Julie is. She doesn't have a tell like May. I watch how much she pours. If she isn't already, she'll be gone after this.
What's Tristan up to? May asks. Stuff around the house, keeping busy,
Julie says. I think he's worried about me being away. He wanted to drive me, but I told him no. 7 hours here, 7 back, twice. Crazy. And it was kind of nice to be alone with my thoughts.
I love being in my car. That's how I survive in LA,
Molly says.
I don't miss driving, May says. It makes me nervous.
I don't mind driving, but I don't like having a car, I say. I stop myself from giving the reason. It's expensive. I'm broke. they already know.
Move back to New York, May says. By New York, she means Manhattan. Please, 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 please.
I shake my head.
May, I could help you find a job.
I'm not going to argue with you about it. I can't.
You're not still sleeping with him, are you?
Julie asks me. A commercial comes on the music channel. I let it distract me from what just happened.
I'm sorry. I know it's a sensitive subject, but I don't know what I missed.
No, I say. I'm not still sleeping with him.
That's good. I'm proud of you, she says. I'm glad it's finally behind you.
Finally, I echo without emotion. Julie's always been the most accepting of what I did, but that means she's also the most forward. She knows I don't like to talk about it in general, ever. But she also knows if I'm going to talk to anyone about it, it's going to be her. When I first told her I was sleeping with my professor, a semi-successful writer who had one of his books adapted into a very successful movie, she told me it was life experience.
You don't think I'm a cliche?
Oh, no, you totally are, she said, but who cares? He's married and has kids, I said, little kids.
That's his problem, not yours.
When I told her I loved him and was following him to Buffalo, even though that was where his family lived, even though I knew not a soul there, and it was cold, and I was abandoning my master's, my scholarship, my life, she said if that was what I wanted, then she supported me.
You have to do what makes you happy, she said.
At the time, she was about to depart for Tokyo. Molly and May told me it was a huge mistake and I would regret it for the rest of my life. They were right, of course, but I didn't want to hear it.
I don't understand, May said. You've always had your head on straight. Why are you doing this now?
I don't know, I told her. Maybe I'm tired of being good. That was part of it, sure, along with the fact I'd never really been in love before. And then there was the other thing, pointed out ever so gently by Molly.
You've got some major daddy issue shit surfacing, she said. You need therapy.
The only person I could talk to about it, free of judgment, was Julie. Toward the end of the relationship, when my resentment congealed and my love peeled like a sunburn to reveal the sneering face of reality underneath, I called her to confess.
Then leave, she said. I don't know what you're still doing there. You're miserable.
I was angry. I called for sympathy and wasn't getting any.
I thought you of all people would understand.
Why? She asked. I love you. I'll support you in everything you do. But you're playing the victim here.
I'm not. You're not hearing what I'm saying.
I am. I'm sorry if you're having a hard time or wish you'd done things differently. You can't change the past, but you can do something now. You can leave.
I'm not like you, Jules. I can't just pick up and leave.
I'm sorry, honey, she said. That's the only advice I can give you. I think that was the last time we spoke of it until now.
Did something happen or did you just stop? She asks.
May and Molly squirm, horrified that this conversation is still happening.
Nothing happened. I told him I didn't want to see him anymore.
He didn't object. That was it.
Do you still talk?
Sometimes, not really. Not like we used to.
And he's still married?
Yep, still married.
All worked out, she says.
She's drunk. She picks at her skin. Her bottom lip is raw. She rubs it, bites it. It must be painful, but she doesn't seem to feel it.
What's new with you, May? Are you going to stay in the city?
Yeah, I love it.
I like your glasses, Julie says, slurring. Can you wear contacts anymore?
Yeah, May says quietly.
Hey, Julie, Molly says, sitting forward. Do you really not remember what happened to you?
Nope, she says, smirking either because she's drunk or because she's lying.
No clue.
Huh, Molly says. Does it bother you? Does anyone want snacks? May asks. I brought a bag full of snacks. I have chips and cookies and I think crackers or something. Here, let's look at the spread.
I have to live with it, Julie says. What's the point of being bothered?
Aren't you curious? Molly asks.
I don't want to know, Julie says, and takes another swig from her can.
She laughs. We're not good at talking about things. I'll take some chips, Molly says.
May hands her a bag of organic potato chips. I don't know how potato chips can be organic or what it matters when you're eating fucking potato chips, but all this is above me. I'm also trying to figure out how we went from having the best time to being severely uncomfortable in a matter of minutes. I guess we forgot Julie gets like this when she drinks. Bold. She says things she wouldn't say sober. Things that upset people. It's funny, the selective memory we have when it comes to the people we love. I remember her dancing on tables, demanding attention from whoever she wanted it from and getting it. I remember her ordering us pizza we never paid for because she overtly flirted with the delivery guys who stood in the doorway immobilized by awe and fear. Like those antelopes you see videos of that try to stay still so the lions won't see them, then try to run when it's already too late. What else you got? I ask May.
Veggie straws, she says. They don't taste like vegetables. I'm confused, but I reach for them anyway. You want some, Jules?
No, thanks, she says. Not hungry. She didn't eat much lunch, and she didn't have any candy or popcorn at the movie.
No, I press her. You want something else? May asks.
I point the open bag toward her. Julie shakes her head.
You try first.
They kind of taste like vegetables, I say, letting one dissolve in my mouth. A hint of vegetable.
Sorry,
May says. She's getting worked up now, ultra sensitive to the soured atmosphere.
I have to pee,
Julie says, practically skipping to the bathroom. She doesn't seem aware of the irritation she's caused, or if she is, she doesn't care. When the door closes, May looks at Molly.
I told you not to ask.
Wait, what? How are you mad at me?
She's not going to tell us anything if that's how we approach her.
That's how she approached Elise.
That's different.
How? I ask. I should let them fight it out, but the more I think about it, the more I'm annoyed.
Because that's just Julie. It's not malicious.
I wasn't malicious, Molly says.
We're whisper yelling. I wonder whether Julie can hear us, or if she can't, whether she's suspicious of the supposed silence.
She's drunk, May says. She gets like this when she's drunk. It's nothing new.
I'm over it,
Molly says. I'm over pretending nothing's wrong. Oh, we're back together again, sugar and rainbows. We went to her goddamn funeral.
No one's pretending. We're not interrogating her.
That's your excuse to avoid confrontation, Molly says. And these chips taste like cardboard.
You're being mean. I tried to do something nice for everyone, and you're all being mean.
What did I do? I ask.
You hate it here. You all hate it here.
That's not true, Molly says.
May's crossed the threshold. Her voice breaks. She blinks rapidly, eyelids flustered by the threat of tears. Molly's going to feel like an asshole, get all red and quiet. There's officially no salvaging the evening. Hey, I sit up on my knees and wave them in closer. May, we appreciate you coordinating this. We do, and you know it. Molly, I get it. It's frustrating. But Julie isn't going to tell us anything until she wants to, drunk or sober. We might as well let her come to us. And I'm sorry I'm such a fuck-up that the mere mention of my ex ruined the whole evening.
It didn't,
May says. You're not.
You don't need to apologize, Molly says,
because she agrees that I'm a fuck-up. Truce? I ask.
Yes, May says.
Okay.
You really don't like those chips?
May asks.
They're all right,
Molly says. Are we getting dinner at some point?
It's 7:30 now, May says. We would have to go sooner rather than later. The kitchen closes at 9.
It's after 7? Jesus Christ.
I'm not that hungry, I say, but we should probably eat something because we've been drinking.
Molly shrugs. I'm not hungry either. Mabes?
Not right now, but you're right. We should probably eat. We can see what Julie thinks when she gets out.
She's been in there a while, Molly says.
3 sets of eyes drift to the bathroom door. In the transition between songs, we can hear the water running. What might be dry heaving, an awful, hollow sound, a cat retching up hair. Should I knock? May asks.
Nah, Molly says. She can handle herself.
What if she's purging?
I don't think so, Molly says. She just had too much to drink.
Lise? May asks, her hands clasped together as if she's in prayer. She wouldn't with us right here. She'd go back to her room, I say. Though it wasn't something the 4 of us openly discussed, Julie was always transparent with me about her disordered eating. It was the subject of one of the first real conversations we had freshman year, beyond, so, do you have a boyfriend? And what's your favorite movie? We were drinking cappuccinos on our way to the library, and I made some self-deprecating comment, probably about my nose, and she started telling me her history with food, eating. She said she had it under control for the most part, but it was something she'd carry with her always, like a bad scar. She talked for a long time until it was dark, the 2 of us roaming around campus holding empty cups. Then she looked at me and said, I've never told anyone this stuff before. Just like that, we were close. I rub my eyes, fight a yawn, lose.
You're fading, Molly says.
I'm messed up from not sleeping last night, sleep deficient.
I'm zonked too. I'm about to pass out by 9 p.m. We're old as fuck.
It's fine, May says. We can get some sleep tonight, recharge. Tomorrow we can walk the grounds in the morning, and then there's an outdoor wine and paint thing in the afternoon.
Is the weather supposed to be nice?
Don't know. May frowns. She checks her phone. Yes, sunny and warm.
There you go, Molly says.
There's a cooking class tomorrow, too, in the morning. Making crepes, if you guys don't want to walk. Either is fine with me, I say.
I'd make crepes.
You would? It's at 10. Works for me.
I would vote for walking, but it's probably too muddy for me, Molly says. My culinary skills begin and end at the microwave, so I might burn the place down. But I'm here for the cooking thing.
Yay! I'm so excited. It'll be fun, May says. You think Julie will like it?
Our eyes return to the bathroom door. I don't know how long she's been in there. Too long. It's my bathroom. I'm aggravated that whatever she's doing it in my bathroom. I'm pissed at her in general. Maybe she thinks coming back from the dead gives her an excuse to say whatever she wants. I hear it again. You're not still sleeping with him, are you?